Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Season 1, Episode 11 of the Brown Baby Podcast. I am your host, Nikesh Shukla. Brown Baby is a weekly parenting podcast asking the question, how do we raise our kids with joy and wonder in uncertain and, let's face it, increasingly bleak times? It's a podcast inspired by my memoir, Brown Baby, a memoir of race, family and home. And each week I invite fellow parents of brown babies, writers, musicians, chefs, comedians, actors and more to talk about their parenting journeys and the highs and lows they've experienced along the way. This is a frank and funny look at parenting, and it will hopefully spark honest, self-effacing conversations about how we tell our kids about the world. It will feature parenting fails, plus the best and worst advice me and my guests have ever received, and hopefully it'll be like a comforting, uplifting podcast for anyone who's ever found themselves searching for answers in a sleep-deprived Google hole. Today's guest is award-winning musician and writer Emily Moss from Emmy the Great. Emma has made 4 albums as Emmy the Great, including the recent one, April. She has scored film and television and writes regularly for The Guardian. Emma is a dear friend of mine, and this week we talk about what it was like for her to tour with a newborn baby, how having a baby has changed her life, and excessive internet usage, and also the corona of it all. Before we start though, just a quick message to say that yes, this podcast is free and I really want to keep it that way. So please, if you're enjoying it, can I please trouble you to buy my memoir, Brown Baby, a memoir of race, family and home, which so many of the themes in these podcasts draw from. So I've put a link to where you can get it from in the show notes. If you have a preferred retailer, that's great. Also, you can order it from your library as well. And, you know, like and subscribe to the podcast and tell all your friends and all the rest of it. And that's about it. So enjoy the podcast. Now we have Emily Moss from Emmy the Great. Welcome to the podcast, Emma. How are you doing?
I am doing great. I am relaxed today because we're only 10 days from the end of this lockdown or whatever it is, and that is good. I feel like the end is in sight. I feel like nothing stands between me and happiness except for COVID-19.
I don't know how to respond to that. No one has ever said nothing stands between me and happiness except for COVID-19. That to me makes it sound like everything is amazing. And you know what? Let's not talk about parenting. Let's talk about how I achieved that mind state where the only thing between me and utopia is a pandemic.
So in the first lockdown, I feel like I was trying so hard to achieve. I cleaned the house every day, although that was because we had a flea infestation, which was awful. I thought about doing an online course. I actually said the words, I think I'm going to get a master's. I was going to read The Mirror and the Light. I bought it, but I haven't read it. And I just totally crashed. And then from that point on, I've been on this like journey of extreme self-care, like therapy. I got so anxious because I was going to put out a record and had to do a gig and I had no idea how to do that, and like everyone in my band was like the parent of a small child and I had to guarantee their safety, that I started taking like anxiety pills. Like I've done everything this year in order to to get on track. And I feel like I finally found, like, we watched Kung Fu Panda on the weekend, 1, 2, and 3. And like, I feel like I've found the space that the Kung Fu Panda has, which is that sometimes there is, it's not the right occasion to, like, it's not the right occasion to strive. And that's where I am right now. And another reason why I am feeling really good at the moment is because I'm sure you understand this, like, I only read on the toilet now, which is like, it's the only practical space where I can have like the tiniest moment of privacy so that I can actually read. And your book is now like the main book in my toilet. And so like, I have this like little slice of joy. Yeah. And also like, I'm very, very, like, I'm on the verge of incontinence still because I don't know why, I just like never regain that skill. So I'm like constantly having a few pages of your book, and it's like the best book that it's like maybe the best memoir I've read, or like neck and neck with The Argonauts on parenting. Like, it's so good. It's actually taken me from 75% to 80%, which is like the maximum percentage that I can go in this pandemic.
Oh, thank you so much. Wow. I don't know how to respond to that. I'm so glad to make your poops more enjoyable.
No, it's not. It's peas as well. Like I, it's because I'm actually, I can read quite quickly. So like, you wouldn't believe like how much of Brown Baby I can consume like an hour after an apple juice.
I'm being sort of weird about it, just because I'm just, you know, you put out an album about a month ago, and you know, one of the things that I really wanted to talk to you about is about finding space to create when you've got someone who's demanding so much of your attention. And you put out an album about a month ago, and that, what I love about your work is that it's always a really amazing capsule of a specific time. And also, you're just one of those rare artists who only ever sound like yourself. And I wondered, in this time that you've been kind of going on the parenting journey, how did you find the time and space to write an album?
I wrote that album before. So I started writing that album at the end of 2017 in Hong Kong. When I finished it, I went back to New York to record it. And during that trip, I decided to go back to Hong Kong. And then I landed in Hong Kong. I was going to take a short sabbatical, and then we were going to gear into like putting the record out. But instead, like exactly 40 weeks later, I had a baby. So... You do the math. But also, I was going to put it out the year after that, but then I sort of had an extended maternity leave, and so it ended up coming out this year. But it actually worked really well because it gave us a lot of focus, like as a family, to have something, you know, that was going on that couldn't be ignored, even if there was like a pandemic going on. But also, it sort of, like you said, it was like a time capsule, and it kind of like reminded us of like a time before the pandemic, or even before like Alex and I were parents. And yeah, it was so nice. It was such a nice experience to do that. And in terms of like making space to be creative, I hardly ever do, except when I have to do it for work, and I still haven't gotten around that yet.
Do you listen back to those songs and think of yourself as almost a different person, or can you still see yourself? Because one of the things I'm quite interested in, and I guess it kind of crops up in the book, is this idea of kind of reconciling who I used to be, or who I was before I was a parent, with that kind of life-changing thing. Not that I believe that becoming a parent makes me any more special or makes me more of myself, but I definitely feel like that it's a very different time of my life, and I don't know if I necessarily look back at who I was and the sort of stuff I used to get up to before I was a parent and still see that as part of who I want to continue to be, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I feel like when I made that record, I'd come to like a huge self-realization. Like I'd been to China, I'd been to a temple, I kind of discovered an affinity with this goddess whose like only thing is mercy. And I just really hit a point in my life where I was like, I really know who I am. And then like the moment after that, I have a baby and then I don't know who I am anymore. So like, it was quite shocking to listen back to the songs and be like, wow, I was so sure of myself. And how come straight after that, there's like a new challenge? But then it came to like an even deeper realization, which is that you're never free of challenges, you know? And there's like this endless process of life or growing up, which is sort of losing your handle on who you are and then regaining your handle on who you are. And then something coming out of, you know, nowhere and knocking you off again.
To talk about that in the context of being a parent, like how have you kind of recalibrated who you are since becoming a parent?
Well, I think like straight after becoming a parent, because I was in Hong Kong and like we had the briefest time in Hong Kong as parents before the protests started and things got pretty stressful and chaotic and isolated. And then we came back to England and then there was a lockdown. So things got very chaotic and stressful and isolated. So like I've sort of almost always parented in a vacuum. Mm. So for me, like opening up the sort of valve of listening to the album was to remind me to kind of connect with the world again. And that's what I was saying earlier about striving less. Like I'm sort of trying to be just a bit more like casual about stuff. You know, maybe I don't give the perfect amount of nutrition in a meal tonight, but you know, we relax. Or maybe we watch a whole bunch of TV one morning instead of listening to songs in Mandarin. You know, but like it keeps us happy. So yeah, like I think for me, trying to find my old self again has been about sort of loosening the grip on perfect parenting. And that's so annoying because I've read all the books that tell you not to be a perfect parent. And yet sort of like every hour I fall into that trap and sort of have to be like, you know, I have to like heavily remind myself or wait until I crash before I reset again and become the Kung Fu Panda.
Well, what I find interesting is all the stuff that you read about being a parent, it's either like how to be the ultimate parent or, oh, I'm a shit parent and you can be a shit parent just like me. And like, there's never any middle ground between the two, which is what most people's lives are like, you know?
Yeah, so that's what I love about your book. There's this bit in your book where you say, no, that's one of the things that I like. There are so many things, I'm going to have to write them down. Like, honestly, I have to say that it is one of the most joyous books that I've ever read. Sorry to keep going on about it. And I think partly I feel that way because parenthood literature is so, it's either like you must strictly follow a routine or your baby will starve to death or it's like entirely follow your instincts, if you didn't have a natural birth you've already failed, you know, like there's just like so many, there's just it, everything is sort of an ideology. And like there's this bit in your book where you say that sometimes you pretend that you dislike your children, you know, just because that's what people expect. And I totally do that. Like I'd be like, oh, you know, I spent the whole weekend with her, roll eyes. But in fact, when I spend the whole weekend with her, I'm thrilled, you know, like I actually really, really like hanging out with my child and doing child stuff. And that isn't to say that it doesn't also tire me out and make me crazy, but ultimately I do feel a pressure to complain.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because whenever people have children who sleep really well, there is a part of my brain that is going, fuck these guys so much, fuck you. And it kind of brings back for me like all of that sort of the misery of like those early few years of sleep deprivation. But you, as you said, it sort of gives you permission to complain about the drudgery, which I think, like, whether I had kids or have kids or not, I'd still have like really drudgerous weekends where I'm not doing anything and I feel like disgusted with my own cabin fever, and you know, there'll always be stuff to complain about. And actually, it just sort of feels like this sort of weirdly British thing to never kind of go, actually, you know, it was all right. You know, we went for a walk, it was lovely. And then my kid wouldn't eat her dinner, even though she promised she really liked spaghetti. But then today she decided she didn't like spaghetti, and that was annoying. And that's the thing, there's just like, none of this is, as you kind of build up an idea of routine and consistency and all the rest of it, you kind of find yourself pinballing between so many different states. And your default is just to complain about all of them, because that's what people expect to hear, I think.
Yeah, so like just after the baby was born, my friend came over who's like, we were in Hong Kong, and she's a film director, and something happened, she couldn't get a project off the ground. She was like, oh, I'm so depressed, like, find it so hard to leave the house at the moment. And I was like, yeah, that is, I totally remember that from being gainfully self-employed, because I was in the middle of maternity leave when we were talking. And, you know, like, it's this sort of like, when something isn't happening, when you're not engaging with the world, you feel this sort of rootlessness and depression. And she looked at me and as if I was about to tell her, but the answer is having a baby. And she was like, and how do you feel now? And I was like, a different kind of depression. But yeah, it's good to remember, like, sometimes when you're mourning the fact that, like, I'm currently having to make like another snack pack when I could be watching Netflix the entire day, to sort of think back to when you used to do that and be like, that also was quite boring. Like, some days are just quite boring.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
In the early days, I used to re-romanticize like going to the pub with friends. And then about 3 months into having a kid, I had the opportunity to go to the pub with some friends. I was in London for something, and I just thought I'd tag on a quick drink onto the end of it. They were like, we won't talk about football as long as you don't talk about kids. And then I was like, well, if I'm sitting here not feigning interest in football and you're sitting here not feigning interest in kids, like, what else do we have to talk about? And it made me realize that, like, I was just beyond that stage of my life where you just sort of turn up, chat some shit, you talk about what you watch on TV, and you go. I know, like, being simplistic about those days, but it just made me realize that, like, whiling away the hours boozing just wasn't where I was anymore, and that's okay. I think it's really easy to kind of romanticize periods of your life where you seem to be having fun, or you were having fun, but it's not like, you know, like, I guess the example I think of is, like, I moved out of London nearly 10 years ago, and for the longest time, and still part of me would be like, I'd love to move back to London, but I wouldn't be able to move back to London in 2010. I'd only be able to move back to London now, and London now has moved on, and I've moved on. And so, and I feel like it's the same thing about those things that I used to do to kind of while away time.
So we've just moved back to London, and both me and my partner, for different reasons, have been out of the UK for 7 years. And it is really weird, like, walking through Hackney and being like, surely, you know, the same neighbor will come out of that door and it's a totally different person. And it's just like, it is the same, your old life. There's a reason why you changed your old life, you know.
Mm.
I definitely have that propensity to look at old photos and think, wow, what a great life I had. And now all I get to do is, you know, or everything I do ends at 5 o'clock at dinner time. But then the other thing I remember is like the times that I've been mostly Instagramming, like whenever I go through my Instagram and I see a lot of photos, it's because I was really, really bored and lonely during that time. And inevitably, it always looks like the best time because I've put more effort into those photos. So I feel like there's like a lot of parenting FOMO that you have. It's like you're FOMOing with yourself. You're like looking back at your old life and being like, oh, I'm missing out on all these experiences. But you chose to not have those experiences anymore.
That your friends aren't sitting at the pub with an empty chair mourning the fact that you're not there anymore. They're getting on with their lives. They might be having kids themselves. They're kind of, and that is the cruelty, I think, of cities. Like, that chair very quickly gets filled. And whether you're there or not, you know, it'd be nice if you're there, but, you know, no one's going to kind of be really upset that you're not. And so it becomes about kind of being kind to yourself and being okay with those decisions. And every now and then I kind of trip up and go, oh man, just like would love to go out one night and get really wrecked and then eat some fried chicken and then like stumble home at 2 a.m. and then wake up at 6 and go to work. It's also okay to not do that, I think.
I haven't parented outside of like a kind of lockdown type situation. So don't you do that in a normal world? Like, don't you sort of like take 2 days off and go somewhere with a friend or you know, like have a staycation as a couple? Because that's what I'm imagining at the end of all this, is that I'm going to go away somewhere for the weekend and stay up till 2 watching TV and wake up really late.
Yeah, I haven't had the opportunity to do that yet. What I've noticed is like all my bad habits just end up just being in the house. Like, I will stay up really late watching stuff and playing computer games, and I will get up as I need to in the mornings to do stuff. But I haven't left the house. And it just makes you realise that actually those bad habits are just in me forever. Like, I can happily keep eating crisps and drinking lager and play computer games till the cows come home and I'd be okay.
But does that work for self-soothing? Because I'm really, really big into self-soothing at the moment. Like, at the end of every day, I'll be like, have you self-soothed today, to myself?
I don't know if it does. I think I was talking to you about this about a month or so ago when I was having a little bit of a low patch and you very kindly got in touch with me. I think what I needed to do, and the reason I have dug out computer games again, and you and I think it was actually at your suggestion, was because what happens when the house is quiet and I'm the only one left awake is that it's really easy to carry on drinking and put Seinfeld on my computer, and while it's on in the background, just scroll aimlessly through the internet. And I realized that I just needed something to do that was sort of interactive, that forced me to do other things. And so concentrating on computer games actually gave me some sort of focus that I just lacked between the hours of 10 p.m. and like 1 a.m. And that's been, don't know if it's self-soothing, but it certainly keeps me off the internet, which I think is a good thing at the moment.
Yeah, is it one of those computer games that isn't linked to other humans? Like, because I play like Skyrim, because every subsequent one after that, every Elder Scrolls after that is sort of like linked to other people on the internet. And I don't have Animal Crossing because I would have to like talk to other people on the internet. Like, I have like an entirely insular computer game world.
Yeah, no, mine is it's a Spider-Man game that I found in a charity shop for an old console, and I've just been playing that and trying to crack that.
Oh, that's so good. So Spider-Man is your self-suit. So like when I was really, really down, about maybe just before I spoke to you last, like I was living in my head in Seattle where Fraser lives, and like sometimes if I was driving past like a tall new build apartment block, I'd be like, you are now like going past Fraser's building. And I know that sounds crazy, but like my therapist doesn't think it's crazy. she thinks it's amusing. But like my person that I use to get through difficult times at the moment is Fraser, because I find his existence soothing, and yours is Spider-Man.
I am also rewatching all of Fraser at the moment because I was thinking about, you know, I have, you know, as I described in the book, I have some issues with comfort eating. And when I think back to that time of like feeling comfortable at home, and it was always lying next to my mum, like curled up with my mum and my sister on the sofa, eating snacks and watching Frasier. And you know what, my mum's not around and Frasier's not on, so I just eat the crisps by myself. I just thought, well, what if I replaced crisps with Frasier? So I've been rewatching Frasier as well, because there's just something really comforting and comfortable about it, and it's still so funny.
It's so funny. It's so not smug. It doesn't do what Friends turns out to have done, which is like, you know, like warped into something horrifically offensive. But yeah, okay, so I've actually broken down why Frasier is so soothing. It's because, like, first of all, his apartment is so nice. It's such a nice environment to look at. You know, everything's like all neutral. There's a lot of space. There's a piano. There's the skyline. And like, they spend all their time with their relatives. And that, to me, as someone with like a Chinese mom, like that makes sense to me. That feels comfortable. And like his problems are so enjoyable. They're like math problems, like, oh, how do I get into the next tier of membership at, you know, at this wine group or something. And they're always solved at the end.
I've got two dates coming to one party.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, oh no, I've got to go to another cabin. And the cabin is always really nicely done up. But ultimately, like, it just is the fact that like it's two brothers and their dad. So basically, I've decided after this year, like the way I've turned myself around is to promise myself I'll be more like Frasier. So like I'm actively...
But not more like Kelsey Grammer.
No, yes. No, I want to become I don't even know any of the names anymore. I want to become an alt-right. Yeah, but I've started wearing tweed, and I listen to Radio 3 exclusively for classical music. Like, oh yeah, and the classical music is a huge part of it. And my next thing is I want to have like a thing of scotch in my house, you know, like people do, like Alec Baldwin in 30 Rock. Like I just want my life to have these little hallmarks of I don't know, like
rich white American classy,
yeah, bougies. Like like my other thing that I always think about is Diane Keaton in Something's Gotta Give, you know, when she's writing her play and she's crying and she's wearing this like huge turtleneck and she's like looking out over the beach in her like Hampton's house that she like has earned from miraculously from being a playwright. Like I find these 90s visions of like Americana make me feel so happy, and I can access them simply by wearing a turtleneck.
I love that. And answering your phone with I'm listening.
Oh yeah, that's such a good idea. Oh, also like, yeah, just like little things like that. Like maybe I'll throw in a little Shakespeare reference that I've studied ahead of time, you know, the next time we speak.
That would be amazing. Also, like I am noticing more and more what a terrible radio DJ he is, because he keeps just slamming a button that probably doesn't do anything because Roz is controlling everything and he takes a lot of breaks. But maybe it's just like American radio where there's lots of adverts. Given that you're someone who's moved around lots of different countries, especially in the, you know, you said you've been out of the UK in the last 7 years, and now that you're back and you're with a kid and you're kind of establishing what it means to be at home or what a home is, how are you approaching that with a kid in mind? Like, what are the things that are really important to you and what are the things that are increasingly not important to you?
So when I met my partner, he'd been in Hong Kong for a while, but he'd basically been living out of a backpack in a studio apartment with not even a kitchen. And I'd been, you know, dotting around America and touring, and suddenly we're in this situation where like the most important thing in our lives is saving up for soft furnishings. It's really, really weird. Like it feels really strange because every few days, a part of me will buck and be like, no, I got, you know, like, I got to do something different. I, you know, like, I can't do this, and then I'll come back to it and be like, no, we are going to get curtains, you know, but like, I'm too cool for curtains. We're just going to stare straight out of that glass. But yeah, like, it's like we're trying to build the world that we imagined for our daughter around her after she came, you know, like, she's the anchor point. And then we're slowly sort of building a family life around it. And I think because of the way that everything has happened with us, like, we moved back to England after she was born, you know, have a sort of like reset in this pandemic. So we are basically building from scratch. And that's kind of nice to already know her really well as we kind of like create the landscape of her childhood memories. And also, like, it's sort of, I don't really care about my environment that much. I'm quite adaptable. I'm pretty happy if I have like music equipment and a computer and some books. So it's quite nice to be in that mindset as we sort of like create a settled family life, because it really can be like a cooperative thing, rather than having this fixed idea that I've always had in my head of what a family home should look like, you know.
That's interesting, because when the child was quite young, quite new, you toured with her, didn't you?
Yeah, we went on tour, and like, people were like writing to me afterwards being like, oh, I'm having a baby and I believe I can go on tour. And I was like, oh my god, all these people are gonna hate me, you know, in a year's time. Yeah.
I can't remember whether this is just stuff that we talked about on text, or you wrote about this in The Guardian, didn't you? This isn't just a conversation we had.
Yeah. No, I did a diary for it in The Guardian. I hope I put across like how hard it was in that.
I remember it being really hard. And obviously our mutual friend Bishy was on tour with you and helped out loads. But it kind of feeds into what you're sort of talking about in terms of what a home can be and how a home can be quite agile, that you were kind of willing to do. Well, not willing, I don't know if willing is the right word, you just did it, you know. Do you look back on it and think, yeah, I'd do that again, or no way was that a good
idea? I had to do that because it was like the 10-year anniversary of First Love, which is my first album, and I was like, there isn't going to be an 11-year anniversary tour. So it was like, I have to do this, I have to break out of my maternity leave and just do this. And like, I'd interviewed Gweno, the artist Gweno, when she'd been touring with her baby, and I'd been really inspired by that. And like, we shared managers, and my managers were like, yeah, Gweno goes to gigs with her baby all the time. And so then after the tour, after the 2 weeks, they were like, how was it? We were really worried about you. And I was like, why? Gweno does it all the time. And they were like, no, she does weekend gigs. You did 2 weeks in a row. And I was like, oh my God. It was really hard, but it also was quite an amazing thing for like someone who's just had a baby and is the primary caregiver at the time, because my aunt came along and I was getting extended time away from baby care ahead of schedule. And it really sort of like, it was quite healing as well. I know, like, it is work, like going on stage to play a gig, then packing up your stuff and then going to sell merch is work. But also when you're looking after a 5-month-old, it's not as hard. Like, I remember lifting like bass drum cases or keyboard cases up this grate in Manchester when it was like really, really raining, and it was like an outdoor fire escape, and just being like, I'm free. This is so great. Yeah, look at me. It's 8 o'clock and I'm out in the world enjoying myself. So like, it's definitely, I'm glad I did it, but it was extremely epic.
And how did that contribute to this sort of agile sort of sense of home that you're describing? Because I really like that. I guess for me, it's always, now that I'm thinking about it in relation to what you're saying, my conception of it is of home is almost quite conventional in a way, in ways that sort of surprise me, because I don't want to be conventional. But
yeah, I mean, I really want us to have a conventional home, and we're getting there, hence the curtains and stuff.
Yeah, that's like level tier one of putting down roots, is getting curtains.
Yeah, and Yeah, and I'm very, very close to having a John Lewis store card. but yeah, so the first year and a half of her life was pretty interesting. Like, we lived in a sort of open plan white box in an industrial estate on the very, very southern tip of Hong Kong, overlooking a power station. We took a lot of photos because it's almost like we don't think she's going to believe it. And we were very comfortable just strapping her to us and just like going places. And that was awesome. But again, with like the whole Kung Fu Panda mentality, I don't think I would do it again if we had another child. You know, it's like, what an adventure, what an incredible story. And then now let's make life a little easier.
Yeah, I really remember just before my kid started school, there was just this real desire in me to go on an adventure, because this would be our last chance before just being trapped in the institutions until the second child is 18. And it was kind of going back to what I was saying earlier about the desire to recapture old feelings or old habits, or feel like you're doing something that isn't just, you know, watching Netflix and going to the pub and whatnot, which is probably what I would have been doing had I not had a kid. And I guess for you, it kind of just happened quite organically. So you've kind of done that. You've kind of had that adventure, and you're kind of ready for the soft furnishings now.
Yeah, like I think probably like you saying that has reminded me that I also want to take her traveling somewhere before she starts school, because as it stands, for most of her like upright post-walking life, she's, you know, been in our house alone. No, I don't think our adventurous spirit has gone. I just think we're probably looking for like more appropriate adventures, because like it was really cool living in an open plan warehouse, like a white box at the end of a industrial estate. But like the moment you have a child, and if the child goes to bed at 7, then everyone sits in the dark for the rest of the day. So like that adventure was sort of like designed for us pre-child, and now we would probably want to design some adventures that were still adventurous, but there's a child involved. So, you know, like going to the zoo is an appropriate adventure, but living in an empty building is an inappropriate adventure.
Yeah. Yeah. Going on a weekend, hiring a camper van for a weekend is an adventure. Overlooking an industrial estate in winter, probably not so much.
Or is that thing when you go on your very first holiday with a child, and then you get there and you're like, oh, we still have the child, so it's not a holiday, you know? And then after that, you never go on that type of holiday again. You only go to like places next to a theme park or something like that.
Yeah, or you go with people that you can share childcare with, and then you don't ever really get to, you have one night where you let loose, and then the next day, or next 2 days if you're like me and 40 and therefore are prone to longer recovery periods, regretting that one day that you had off because your kids still want to have the holiday.
Yeah, or you go with people who can offer childcare, i.e. your family, which I feel very, very lucky to have that, so I'm not complaining. So but you go with people who can offer you childcare, and then you feel so bad about them having to do all the childcare that you offer to cook at like every single meal. You spend the entire time preparing like perfect food in the kitchen. Not perfect, but like in my head, perfect.
It's like you've been there on my last three family holidays. Kind of looking forward as your kid is getting bigger, and you know, you're thinking about what you want to do next creatively. How will you kind of be carving out that time to get stuff done? Because I guess for me, whether it's sort of obvious or not, as we were kind of talking at the top, like your work is very much a capsule of a specific time in your life. And so does that mean that you imagine the next things that you'll be working on will be kind of inspired by this sort of return to nest? That's probably not the best way of putting it. Or like this idea of having a kid and becoming a parent, or are you looking elsewhere for things to write about? Like how are you kind of envisaging create your creative time and your influences going forward?
Well, like this year has been really quite interesting in terms of priority shifting, because we can't access our family network really anymore for childcare. So we've been quite restricted. It's been pretty hardcore in terms of just like tag teaming between me and my partner. And like, yeah, it's essentialized all my activities. And at first it was sort of almost unbearable to be like, I can only do things that are essential to, you know, like continuing to exist financially and like for the betterment of my career or whatever, which I acknowledge is already really in a good position. But now I feel like that focusing has been quite good, because I've realized there were a lot of things that I did in my life that I actually didn't want to do anymore. And it's sort of taken this extreme pressure of childcare during a pandemic to make me sift out the stuff that I can't live without, so I have to develop it. The stuff I can live without, therefore what's the point? And also kind of like focus my future goals. Yeah, so like it's that analogy of juggling balls, isn't it? And you can let some balls drop, but don't let the glass ones drop. Mm. And I'm sort of starting to realize which elements of my quote unquote portfolio career were not serving me anymore and not making me happy and not conducive to family life, and the stuff that, you know, was always on the horizon that I could maybe now work on because I'll have shifted stuff around.
That novel's coming.
Yeah, I've written a whole bunch of words of it. Actually, that's something I gave myself a treat after I did that gig at the Barbican, which was so, I felt so lucky. Like they had to lock down almost straight after, and I'm like one of the only gigs that actually had an audience, and I feel so lucky. And I loved it, but it was so stressful trying to do something that you're used to doing, but under those circumstances, that the next day I was just like, I have to give myself a present. And so I spent the next week like sort of pottering away at this novel idea I've had for ages. And that was actually an example of giving myself creative space. And it came at the end of like a huge push. And like, it's a shame that I think as a parent, you feel like you have to wait until you have no choice but to give yourself a treat. Whereas like there probably is time for a little treat every week, you know, like I've been doing like ambassadorship for PIPA, which is Parents in the Performing Arts, and chatting to people like maybe they make their living as a music engineer, but they also, you know, have an artist persona that they want to keep up, but because it's not their job, they barely do it. And, you know, those little treats are so essential to who we are as people, pre-parent people and parent people. And, you know, I just sort of wonder why we don't value that. We don't value ourselves enough to just make time to do that.
Yeah, I wonder if it's because this sort of feeling that it's then taking time away from kids. And I guess as my kids have got older, I've realized that actually it's increasingly more important that I hold back and let them engage in independent play and follow independent interests and bring those interests to me when they want someone else to be excited about it. That actually does claw back time for me to do other things like read when I'm not on the toilet or on a train, which is what the only times before I used to be able to read, or stare out the window and think about things, and or just be alone with my thoughts rather than just trying to, you know, fill time with like constantly trying to keep them engaged. And that's been a really important thing, this sort of idea that they don't need constant entertaining.
Yeah, it's mental space, isn't it? And it's also like sometimes when you get time away from your kid, you think, well, now I ought to clean the house, or maybe I should deal with the MOT or something. But like, you do that all the time. Sometimes the thing you really need to do is like go work on the creative project that, you know, you have on the back burner. Just look it over, you know, give yourself an hour and then and then unload the dishwasher or something.
Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. Thank you so much for joining us. I've put a link to Emma's website in the show notes, so you can go and buy various vinyls and merch of Emmy the Great, and you can pick up some amazing records and all the rest of it, t-shirts and baby grows, I think. There's also a buy link for Brown Baby, so please head there and buy my memoir. Thank you so much to Emma, to Acast, and to Bluebird, my publishers, and I will see you next week, my friends. Goodbye.
Brown Baby, I am Brown Baby. Yes, I am, I am. Silly Brown Baby.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.